Hey everybody, it's great to be with you. I'm really excited we get to talk to another amazing veterinarian in Australia. This is Dr. Edward, the healing vet, Bassingthwaite. Bassingthwaite. And
it's a terribly long last name.
It's terribly long last name, but once you get it, you get it. And so he also said we can call him Dr. Edward, the healing vet. So welcome, Dr. Edward, the healing vet.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Gosh, thank you. So one of the cool things when I found you and researched you and learned a little bit more about you and your practice, well, there's a lot of things. But one of the things that stuck out to me is my partner, Ian Billinghurst, Dr. Ian Billinghurst, my vet currently, who's been my vet for 11 years, and several others, and you. You all have you share these fine art passions. So Ian's a painter, my vet is a woodworker, and you have this side of you that's a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it always strikes me, it's certainly not 100% of the great holistic, you know, functional, multimodality vets, but there's something you guys all share. You know, there's a little bit of a Renaissance person in you, you know, if we can use the term. But there's this you guys have multi facets of yourselves. Do you have any clue of why that might be? Have you ever thought of that?
I don't know. I'm just like doing a lot of different things. I like beautiful things. I've been doing music since I was about, I don't know, 13 or 14 at school.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just like making beautiful things, or as beautiful as I can make them, you know. I don't know where that comes from or why it is. I suppose I grew up in a family that values art and beautiful things too, so that might have some impact on it. And I think too, to be really healthy as a veterinarian, if you don't have some passions outside of your work, I think that's really unhealthy.
Yeah, if your life is just solely animals, practicing, healing, seeing illness, or you know, some sort of dysregulation or dysfunction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, so I just find that very interesting. I think there's something about that. I think some of the greatest healers are also, they've got this science side and this art side, and they practice, they can go back and forth between one or the other very easily. So
yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something very cool about that. So we're going to talk about your practice, and you know, there's so much about you that's super interesting. I mean, you have this background with horses and, you know, cattle, and then what brought you to medicine, from what I've read, was your diagnosis of chronic fatigue and Lyme disease.
Well, that's certainly what brought me to the more holistic, complementary, alternative, intuitive, energy healing side of things, because after I got diagnosed, well, Western medicine helped me with a couple of the things,
yeah,
a couple of the major kind of symptoms, but then they ran out of answers really quickly, and I was left to, I had to find something that was going to help me feel at least somewhat better. And I found that, you know, I did a lot of diet change, explored a lot of supplements and herbs and things like that. And that's kind of what triggered me into energy healing as well, because it gave me more symptomatic relief than anything else that I was able to find.
Wow. That's great. What is there anything that was more than others that gave you the biggest bang for your buck when it came to your symptoms?
Well, the whole chronic fatigue thing's pretty complex. I think there was a lot of different factors, you know, trauma from boarding school, and I had a really bad root canal that I didn't know was a really bad root canal till some 15 years later when I had it removed and my health improved. I didn't actually really realize I had Lyme probably for the first 15 years of being unwell, so I just kind of hobbled around in chronic unwellness and go and see a practitioner and get a little bit better for 6 months, and then it stopped working. So getting onto Lyme herbs was one of the key things.
Yeah.
I also then got onto a prescription medication called low-dose naltrexone, which helped a lot.
Mm.
I got out of abusive marriage and relationship and got into kind of healthy social and intimate relationships. So there's a whole big broad range of things.
Wow.
You know, got back into exercising consistently, doing resistance exercise, and Qigong's another thing that I found really, really helpful for vitality and well-being over time.
Wow. Well, you really worked at it.
Oh, God, yeah, I still do. Every 5 days a week, I train every in the morning for my health and well-being.
Good for you. It's what occurred to me is you're the opposite of what a lot of people do, which is normalize their pain. You know, you said you were living with this. You probably just dismissed it. I'm probably working too hard. I'm tired. I'm not sleeping well. You know, and you just didn't ever diagnose your Lyme disease.
Well, I just didn't even realize that Lyme was a thing that it could possibly be. It ended up, I was doing some work with someone who had Lyme, and they said, wow, I reckon you probably should get on some Lyme herbs. And when I did, you know, I went and read Stephen Booner's books all about Lyme and co-infections and Bartonella and a whole lot of other things. And it took quite a number, you know, it took some years of being on the herbs to really get the improvement. But yeah, that was a big turning point.
Wow. So, You also mentioned you got out of these unhealthy relationships. I want to just bring that to dogs.
Uh-huh.
Do you think, I mean, they can't get out of unhealthy relationships usually. How much of an impact do you think that is on dogs' disease state or wellness, either one?
Well, it has a profound the state of being, a state of consciousness, where the humans are at has a really profound impact on the animals. And these days, I'm not so much a primary care veterinarian. I consult, you know, one and a half days a week, and I call myself an intuitive integrative vet these days. Right. So I've been doing intuitive work and energy healing with animals and with humans for decades. So. But I find a lot of the time I'm working with the humans as much as I am with the dogs or the cats. And humans often have kind of like an emotionally codependent thing going on with their pets where they
you think
they use the pets to help regulate themselves in a way that's possibly not the healthiest thing for all parties concerned. You get a lot of humans that are kind of overly like what helicopter pet parents, so that they, if they get a puppy, they, you know, they're hovering over the puppy, and if there's the slightest little thing that stresses the puppy out a little bit, they're patting it and soothing it, and the animals never get a chance to learn how to self-regulate. And humans in general are just terrible at expressing healthy boundaries when it comes to their interactions with their pets.
Yeah. Wow. I think a lot of dog trainers would agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
excuse me for one sec. I've got a cat who wants to come in.
Sure. Love this background.
She's banging on the door. So you know what? You've got to interrupt a podcast for your pets now and then.
That's awesome. No, mine's right here just laying down. But the helicoptering, the, you know, constant, you were saying that, you know, it's okay, you know, petting, it's okay, it's fine. I'm sure there's a lot of different ideas of how to train your dogs, but it's my experience that many of them will tell you that all you're doing is you're really setting in stone that the reaction that dog is having at that moment is okay or should be reinforced. So if the dog's stressed out or worried or upset or angry, you're really marking that as that's the correct feeling to have, right?
Well, I don't know if it's correct, but whatever you reinforce tends to get stronger with your animals. I think the other thing is that most humans just don't know how to show up as what I call a benevolent leader for their dogs, which is, wow. You know, sometimes you've got to ask your dogs to do things they don't want because it's the best thing for them. Like maybe go on a diet, and when they're hungry, you don't give them food. Or, you know, you say, well, I actually have a personal space. I'd like you to respect that a little bit. And when first time I do that with a lot of people, I look on their faces and it's really emotionally difficult for them because they can't bear their dog having even healthy emotional discomfort. So that's a big part too of the whole energy body balance method, which I've created and teach. It's not just about finding and relieving soft tissue pain, neck and back pain, trauma and anxiety. It's about learning to be able to talk dog and talk cat and actually have more open communication and healthier connection and a stronger relationship. And this is something that, you know, I'm still working on in all aspects of my life. Relationship is something that is infinite. You know, you're never going to, you're always going to be getting better at that communication and connection and flexibility and showing up in a powerful but kind way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Benevolent leader, is that what you called it?
Benevolent, yeah, kind.
Yep, yep.
So I say to people, you know, if you've ever worked for someone who just inspired you to want to do your best, who was kind, who wasn't micromanaging, who brought out the best in you, you know, that's what I encourage people to be for their pets.
Wow. Dr. Edward, this is a beautiful articulation of what I haven't articulated, which is what I think, how I think you should show up for your pets and what I try. And it is a constant effort. Not in every moment, but you know, you do have to think sometimes about how you're getting read by your animal. You know, you're getting read by them, you know.
Oh yeah, our animals read nonverbal communication about a million times better than us. And the other key thing that I say to people when we come in, I work with a lot of people with dogs with behavior issues of one kind or another. And you've got to be more determined than your dog.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're lost, right? You can't help them. You can't get them into a place that's going to be healthy for you and them and safe for them as well, so that, you know, you can ask them to do what they need to do to be safe and to be able to live with you in a harmonious way. Another thing you're saying, you know, showing up for your pets. Well, the most important thing I've learned is you've got to show up for yourself first before you can show up for anyone. That includes your pets. And you've got to fill your own cup to overflowing before you can really give in a healthy way to your pets, to your family, and out into the world. And I think that's the biggest lesson I learned from chronic illness is, wow, if you're not got a really solid, consistent self-care thing going on in your life, then you're kind of dead in the water.
Yeah. Well, it certainly makes it pretty difficult and to be that benevolent leader. So you know, it just occurred, I'm playing, as you're talking, I'm playing scenes from just like the last few weeks with my dog. I mean, they're just in the top of my head, you know, the front of my mind. And yeah, I fast my dog once a week, and I feel bad about it every day. Every week I do that. And every day I do it. I mean, I think that's normal, but I think he's more ball driven than food driven. So what we do is we make adjustments. And usually what I do is I fast him on days when I'm really busy and I leave him at home and he just sleeps. So if I'm around a lot, you know, he's in his normal patterns and he knows, you know, there's usual times when he gets fed or cues or all that. And I just remove those. And also, it's no secret that, I'm a little soft. I'm not completely hard, hard edged, but so I will give him like 32 ounces on his fasting days of coconut water. It's what he likes.
Yeah, and that's a good compromise. I mean, I'll also say to people, well, if it's too emotionally difficult for you and your dog to fast completely, then bone broth is another thing you can use on fast days.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, you know, with my dogs and cats, when I fast them, I don't change anything because it gives me an opportunity to give them a healthy no, which is good for both of us, even though it's a bit uncomfortable for both of us, you know. So
yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Yeah. Well, and on that note, first of all, the coconut water I like because I've said this many times, it's worth repeating. It flushes them out. So the colon almost like gives a whole day of colon rest, which I think is a really good thing. All the organs get a rest. But And it's pure coconut water, no sugar, nothing added to it. Just to make that clear. The other thing too is, you know, all my dogs have, you know, I have labs, so, you know, they love food.
They do love food.
You know, and so I have a 6-foot rule. And, you know, when I'm eating, you're 6 feet away, and that's it. And everybody knows it. And it's simple. There's no yelling. There's no scolding. You know, I just, and in fact, most of the stuff I whisper, I make you listen to what I'm saying. And, you know, I'll just go, you know, I'll just say, no, this isn't happening. Get back down. You know, really calm, really secure, confident. And, you know, I just try to show up the way I would want somebody to show up for me. You know, I'm in command. There's nothing to worry about. Everything's under control, and everything's, you know, we're content. Everything's, you know, stasis. So I really appreciate what you say there. I mean, I think I'm going to have to take this course because, I'm so into this, and you know, I feel this for kids and I feel this for animals. I really feel it for animals because they don't have, we don't have the same communication as we do with our kids. Or that we know of anyway, but, how people are showing up so neurotically for their animals and what it does to animals. It's, you know, just a shame.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, everyone's got their journey too. So if anyone out there is listening, you know, don't beat yourself up if you're suddenly noticing that you might be doing this. It's more like, whoa, there's an opportunity to make a positive change that's going to make a good difference for my pets and for me. I also find a lot of people won't actually make positive changes in their life for themselves until they realize that they're doing it for their pets, and then they'll suddenly do all these kind of things that have got elements of healthy discomfort that they wouldn't dream of doing just for themselves. So you can use your love for your pets as a motivator to create positive change in your life, because every time you deal with your anxiety or work to resolve and integrate traumas that you've had in your life and that sort of thing, your pets get tremendous benefit from that.
Yeah, it's incredibly true. And if you see behaviors in your dog that you've had, we'll use dogs as an example, that you've had for a long time, hey, it's an opportunity. It's that they are mirrors of you. And they're real mirrors. So if you're seeing some behaviors, look, and I have a lot of people that are close to me, very close to me, that have a lot of unwanted, very strange behaviors. And, you know, all I can say is, look, you've got to look inward and you've got to evaluate what's going on in the home. If it's your spouse or your kid or kids, got to look at it, you know, but these are hard looks. They're good opportunities. I like that word. They're really, really good opportunities. I think super good opportunities. I mean, we spend a ton of money for therapists to tell us what, you know, what we're thinking, how we're behaving. Well the dog is doing that. I mean,
yeah.
Dog is just mirroring it all back to you. So tell me about a web.
So the whole energy body balance method is something that I've created over, you know, probably 25 years of working hands-on with thousands and thousands of animals.
Yep.
Oh, here comes the cat. Come to join
us. Well, hey.
This is Parvati. She loves coming up and getting in the middle of whenever I'm doing podcasts or videos and video bombing us. So I first started working hands-on with animals when I was about a year and a half out from vet school. I was lucky enough to be in a town that a vet called Dr. Tom Ahern came to do some work with some horses. And Dr. Tom had worked out a way of working with horses' necks, releasing tension and restrictions throughout the spine in the neck. And he would get these horses that had a forelimb lameness that other vets had nerve blocked and x-rayed and worked up, you know, once, twice, three times, couldn't find any cause for it in their workup. And Dr. Tom would anaesthetize these horses, get them down and stretch and mobilize the neck, and then the lameness would go away. So as he taught me, you know, you can get nerve root compressions that can cause really pain, dysfunction, where those nerves feed out in the body. And I was fascinated because no one had taught me anything about this at university in my veterinary training at all.
Yeah.
My next thought was, well, what about dogs and cats? Because they have necks and backs too. So I just started exploring, you know, more with more curiosity and a little bit deeper throughout the necks and spines of all the animals I was seeing. And very quickly I started finding areas of pain and restriction and tension that before I started actively looking for them, I was totally missing them.
Yeah.
Now, when I found it, I wanted to help these animals. So I started playing around with pressure and movement with my hands, physical therapy. Yep. There were no modalities then to learn, you see. There wasn't, you've got Bowen and Emmett and myotherapy and millions of different things you can learn these days. But 25 years ago, there just wasn't anything available.
Yeah.
So I just learned by doing. And then I got chronic fatigue. I got a lot of pain and tension myself. So then I had a lot of really high-level physical therapists, Rolfers, craniosacral practitioners, osteopaths, all sorts of people work with me. And being on the autistic spectrum, I've got a very, very highly refined kinesthetic sensitivity. So I kind of learn a whole lot from having people work on me and then can apply it to the animals.
Wow.
So, yeah, and then what happened is I formulated this into skills, and probably about 10, 11 years ago I started teaching face-to-face classes, and then in 2019 we started teaching online, and now we've got, I don't know, some 42, 43 practitioners and 7 certified teachers around the world, and thousands of other people that have done it more for their own pets. And one of the big things that motivates me is that so there's this thing that I've discovered called silent pain. So animals can have high levels of soft tissue neck and back pain. They just don't show you any signs of it.
No.
I learned that because I missed really awful neck pain in my own little dog, Mitzi, for 3 weeks. Now, I took him off to be my demonstration dog at an event, and he was just a little bit grumpier about other dogs coming near to him than usual. That night I went home and I found, as soon as I touched his neck, he's going, oh, that's really, really sore. I'm going, what the hell's going on? Because he seemed to be totally normal. He was running around, jumping in and out of the car, wanting to go for walks, not showing any real behavioral changes that even an experienced vet could see to say that there was pain there. Now, it turns out Mitzi had had a fall on the steps 3 weeks before that my wife had seen, but as she said, he got up, shook himself off and seemed totally fine, so I didn't think to tell you. So that was pretty upsetting for me to miss pain in my own dog, you know, and that's when I started thinking, well, if an experienced vet can miss that level of pain in their dog, how many other pets have got pain that the humans can't see?
Yeah.
And it turns out it's around about 53% of people are missing significant soft tissue pain in their pets, and just about every second animal that comes through the door to see me, once I get my hands on them, we find significant pain and suffering that, before, and the thing about silent pain is the only way you can 100% consistently find it is to feel into the body.
Wow.
When you engage with the pain and tension, then the animals go like this and show you, oh, that's where it hurts, that how much it hurts. So yeah, that's my passion, is trying to, because this is still not being taught in vet schools. Another problem with it is that it's invisible to x-rays and ultrasounds and CTs and MRI scans. And, you know, if I'm talking to a group of people in person, I say, how many people have woken up one morning or stretched the wrong way and their back or neck's gone ping and they've been in agony for days?
Yeah.
Hands go up everywhere, right? But probably 99 times out of 100, if you go to a doctor like that and they do x-rays and everything, they're going to say, well, we can't see anything. We'll give you some pain relief. Off you go.
Wow. You don't practice chiropractic, right?
No, what I practice is not chiropractic. Chiropractic, they do what's called manipulations, which is small but high amplitude, high velocity energy coming into the body with hands, or they have these little trigger things.
Yeah.
So whole energy body balance is a neurofascial body work, working with neurofascial tissues. There's a whole range of skills ranging from really gentle, delicate, subtle, light work like craniosacral. We have some particular skills that are very good for relaxing the animal. So practiced every day, they can really help anxious and traumatized animals to improve their symptoms dramatically.
Yep.
And then we have an assessment process so you can work out where all the pain is in the body and a whole range of deeper release and mobilization work to then heal that. And, you know, it's actually really easy to learn once you know how. I mean, you'd say that about riding a bicycle, but if you'd never ridden a bicycle and you got on one at the age of 40 or 50, you'd probably fall over a few times before you could ride along, right?
Yeah. Yeah, not easy to learn at all. So would you recommend then, and I'm assuming the answer is yes based on what you just said, would you recommend that pet parents could take your course and learn?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because really you need to get your hands on your pets round about at least once a week, because you don't know if your pet slept in a funny position and they've got a sore that they didn't have before. You don't know what your pet's been doing when you're out at work. Maybe they slipped when they jumped on off the couch. Maybe they fell going up the steps. Maybe they were playing with their friend and had a crash.
Yeah.
And the thing about this silent pain, chronic soft tissue pain, it builds up over time from all the wear and tear and traumas and events of life. So pretty much any animal over 5 or 7 years of age is going to need regular body work to help keep them as comfortable as possible.
Yeah. It stacks.
Yeah, basically that's what happens. It does. It stacks all the way through life, as we would know as we get older, right?
Yeah, right. You should have your hand on your pet, cat, dog, horse all the time. I mean,
well, you know, if you have we ticks, pat
everything.
We pat and touch our animals all the time, right? We love to give them attention. And if you come and learn whole energy body balance, then you can make all your touch therapeutic and healing and connecting. And it also makes your relationship with your pets better. As you can see, Parvati really enjoys this quite a lot. She chases me around and demands it.
You become this the thing that we revere our animals for, like just how amazing they are, you become more of that by being able to connect on this weird magical level that they have, which is energy, I think. You know, and that's a pretty special gift to be able to give yourself.
Well, absolutely. And we have kind of two major strands of the work in the whole energy body balance method. We have the body work side of things, which is all about the physical therapy, really engaging with the tissues and structures of the body to find and relieve pain and tension. And of course that helps anxiety and trauma as well, because anything that happens to the body affects the whole body. Then the second major thread that we have and teach is energy work, which is intuitive awakening and using healing, natural healing energies to support your pet's well-being and to connect more deeply with them, understand them better, all that sort of thing.
Wow. Okay. I'm very interested in this personally. So if somebody thought this was a little woo-woo, we say that at least in the United States, or too mystical or just seeming a little far out, what do you say to that?
Look, there's actually some pretty good evidence out there. There's some very high grade replicated randomized placebo controlled studies that show evidence that energy therapies or energy healing can provide a benefit greater, you know, significantly greater than placebo. So it probably comes as a surprise to a lot of people to find that. Now the science is not mature, you know, and science is expensive and difficult, but even so, there is evidence that shows that it works. And for me, when I first learned the first modality that did energy-based kind of therapies that I learned many years ago, my little dog showed me very clearly that she could tell when I was using this at a distance, and she liked it because she would come and sit at my feet every time I practiced, and I would be sitting in the same place in my little kind of hut where I lived on the farm, doing the same kind of thing, pen on paper. But she wouldn't come and turn up when I was just writing, but within a few minutes, every single time I connect to that energy, and, you know, after 20 or 30 times, it was obvious, wow, she can feel what's going on and she wants to be near it. She likes it. She can sense it at a distance and wants to be with me while I'm doing it. So that was probably when I first have gone, wow, look at that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and also one of the gifts that I give myself daily that I look for in my dog is that deep breath, that deep, calm, slow breath.
Yeah.
That to me is like I take that as a win personally, because there's an environment there. He's completely at rest. I mean, he's different because my dogs go everywhere with me. They do everything. They know that I'm, you know, I'm just doing all kinds of stuff and they're in it. They're excited. They're happy to be doing stuff with me. And then, you know, we chill out. I usually nap once a day for 10 minutes and we do that. And, you know, and so there's this like, okay, it's time to work and okay, it's time to chill and relax. And then putting them in commands, like I have a take a break command and I have a down command. Those are basically, you know, take a break is casually go relax. It's kind of like turn off your brain. We're fine now. Yeah. But that you're bringing these things up for me as you're talking, because, you know, the deep breath is a really, really good one.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we have physical silent pain in pets, but there's also a lot of animals suffer emotional silent pain, which is undiagnosed anxiety, overexcitement, overarousal. You get these animals that just can't switch off, that can't settle, that are hypervigilant, that get overexcited, can't learn, that have training and behavior problems. Yeah. And all of these animals can't regulate into healthy relaxation, and that is very unhealthy for these animals. And that's another key thing that I really love helping people and animals with the whole energy body balance work. Now, for instance, I had a staffy come to see me a few years ago, huge, big, muscly fella. And the woman and the family had been studying nursing kind of at home, studying mostly. Then she graduated and she went off to hospital for shift work, and this dog lost his mind and was eating the house when left alone. So really severe separation anxiety.
Ooh.
Well, I taught them how to do some of the relaxing touch from the whole energy body balance method. And I suspect that her and her two daughters gave that dog about, I don't know, 30 hours of relaxing touch a day, because within 2 weeks, separation anxiety was gone. In fact, that dog was some days not even getting off his bed. He was so relaxed when his mum came home. So
wow.
That's the other big thing that I'm really passionate about is helping people teach their dogs how to switch off and relax and be calm and easy, because that's something that humans, again, are really bad at. We just tend to want to stimulate and excite our dogs, and we never teach them how to, well, come back down, switch off, relax, and get into that healthy relaxation state. And you know,
yeah,
a healthy dog should be spending around about 80% or more of their life in healthy relaxation. Now, that's including sleep.
Yeah.
But most dogs don't do that.
Yeah. It's like lions, you know, most of their life is sleeping.
Well, you look at wild dogs. Most of their life is sleeping too.
Yep. Yep. You know what occurs to me with your musical abilities? You should come out with a really cool, like on a loop. You could just, when somebody leaves and they want to, you know, do the energy work to their dogs, and then when they're leaving, they can put that on play or just keep replaying it.
I do know someone who I've interviewed for summits and things like that who does that, Lisa Spector. So you might want to get her on your show at some point too. But she has created a whole lot of music specifically for dogs for relaxation.
I'm into that. I have a my first black lab. His name is Buddy, and I used to call it, I'm turning on Buddy's channel. I used to have a, you know, smooth, real smooth soundscapes and real beautiful. And boy, when I turned that sucker on, he went right to his bed and he was like, he was out. Pavlovian response, or, you know, to be sure. What was that person's name?
Lisa Spector.
Lisa Spector. Okay. All right, Lisa, we're coming for you. want to talk to you.
Oh, she's lovely. I've interviewed her a few times. She's an awesome human.
Awesome. Well, this was a great window. I'd like to have you on again, and I'd like to go. I'd actually like to take your course, and I'd like to talk to you in much more depth about this.
Okay.
I
could probably come back a dozen times. I've got so many interesting things we can talk about. It's not
funny. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is just like, this is once you open this box, there's all sorts of things fling out of it. You know, I mean, I want to talk to you. I had a yellow lab named Owen, and the most special dog, and kind as, never did nothing to anyone. That's what I always would say. Never did nothing bad to anyone. He was just the kindest dog. And I think he was on the spectrum. You mentioned that you are on the autistic spectrum, right? And I'd imagine I am some form too, but to some degree. But we always thought that he was. And what a just a special, special animal he was. And, I treated him a little bit. Well, I treat all my dogs differently, very, very much for their own personalities. But, I think back to how important it is to know your animal and give them the environment that they need, because his environment wasn't completely like the dog he looked up to, my dog Buddy, who was very confident and aggressive. And, he lived life with real, real zeal. And Owen was just, out for all the stimulation he could get and see from the window. He spent a lot of time at the window looking out, and he was a character. Really getting to know him and just how he sees the world was very, very special to me. So anyway, I just regret that for those two guys that I had, those were my first dogs as adults, that I didn't do any of this energy work with them. But I think my petting was pretty good.
Yeah, well, you can only do what you know when you know it, and then you go and grow and you can do more, right?
That's right. That's right. Well, so Dr. Edward, thank you for this time. We'll go in deeper into some more topics in the future. And I know it's early for you in the morning over in Australia. So thanks again for doing this early with us.
Yeah, you're welcome. And look, anyone out there who's watching and listening, if you want to work with me, go along to wholeenergybodybalance.com. You can drop into thehealingvet.com. I also do, holistic veterinary mentoring and consulting all around the world over Zoom. We have a free pet silent pain, anxiety and trauma masterclass that you can come along and learn all the nitty gritty when it comes to pet silent pain and what you need to do to find, make sure that you're not missing it and keep your dogs happy and comfortable in their bodies and minds.
And just to be clear, what's the difference between thehealingvet.com and the wholeenergybodybalance.com?
Well, wholeenergybodybalance.com is the modality or the method that I've created. So that's this healing body work and energy work for pets, people and horses. So you can learn as a home practitioner. You can get certified as a professional practitioner if you want to do the work in a larger way. We have teacher training programs. Thehealingvet.com is more my work as a veterinary practitioner.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful. All right. Well, thank you very much for being with me, and thank you all for watching today. And Dr. Edward, stay with me. We'll end the recording, and I'll chat with you for a little bit afterwards. Talk to you about the program. And thank you, everybody, for watching. Have a great night.
See you all later. Thank you.